Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers who work in many fields and teach us the art of living, how to work in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace, and use the technological advances available to us. The information we present is taken from the writings of Benjamin Krem, a disciple of a Master of Wisdom, and also from teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. We include teachings from many schools of thought to demonstrate how they are working out in the world. Our articles are often inspiring. We hope to inform the public of actions taken around the globe to improve conditions for us all and to find means of addressing some of our most pressing problems.
Hello and welcome to the program. Today we have a piece by Scott Champion wondering whether a systematic financial crash is approaching, then an article about a Bangladeshi woman and some related facts from the United Nations about empowering women workers, and if we have time, a small piece about a Dutchman and his anti-smog bicycles. But first, our article is from 2017.
Karl Marx famously said that in the end, capitalism would consume itself, and that a greed-based system ultimately would allow no other final outcome. While he did not give a prediction as to when he thought that this would occur, current financial and economic factors are leading more financial professionals to wonder if we are fast approaching a meaningful economic dislocation.
Since the global collapse of 2007 to 2009, the world's financial markets have regained all-time highs or have enjoyed considerable upward movement and stability. The response to that collapse by the U.S. Federal Reserve and Treasury to bail out the commercial paper market and, by extension, the several trillion-dollar money market fund industry, plus the wildly speculating banks, hedge funds, and insurance companies who were gambling with other people's money, that set off an eight-year binge in many of the major global financial asset classes.
Trillions of dollars were poured into the banks, insurance companies, and other financial concerns by U.S. authorities, ostensibly to hold together U.S. financial system, and by extension, the global system. Former U.S. President George W. Bush was quoted as saying, "If money doesn't loosen up, this sucker will go down." According to numerous sources, former Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson, backed by Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bianchi, pushed hard for a financial bailout. Other commentators noticed that the entire system was within a day or two of failing if liquidity was not provided to the commercial paper market. Failing that rescue, the hundreds of trillions of dollars in derivative bets would have brought down the remainder of the financial system.
Ever since the bailouts for the lucky holders of capital, it has been a wild eight-year party. Personal jets, record-setting art purchases, and trophy real estate properties around the world have been well advertised to demonstrate the wonders of capitalism. And it is true for the one percenters. What a wonderful life they enjoy while the party lasts. Unfortunately, for the average world citizen left behind by the inexorable grind of market forces, it has been a painful time indeed. The desire for capital to maximize returns has left an angry, broken, and bewildered public leaning towards populism and nationalism, with poor paying jobs, unemployed or underemployed, drowning in debt and struggling to maintain a basic lifestyle. Capitalism today is a sad, sick system benefiting the very few at the expense of literally billions. So the question arises, how much longer can this continue? What might precipitate a new crisis?
In order for the world economy to achieve its outstanding economic growth, debt levels have exploded to over 200% or 300% of GDP in various world economies. China has been leading the way lately, but now the Japanese government has become the largest shareholder in Japanese companies, making endless bids in their domestic bond market to hold interest rates below market rates. Japan is the developed world's most indebted country. The European Central Bank has for several years been buying up most of the available European bonds until there is little of quality left to buy and, like Japan, is openly discussing buying stocks. All of these advanced economies have simply followed the USA's example to bail out and sustain their economies. But this cannot last forever. These same central banks, concerned with reining in various asset bubbles, are signalling tighter financial conditions ahead. As global markets run on easy money and credit, tighter monetary conditions are likely to precipitate a crisis.
But one of the most interesting reasons to expect a financial crash are the current arguments in finance that high-frequency trading systems have made the entire system inherently unstable because today's markets are run by mathematical algorithms and high-speed computers programs, all vying for tiny percentage profits by placing massive trades which are measured in 1 or 2 milliseconds. In October 2014, the 10-year U.S. Treasury bond market, one of the largest and most liquid markets in the world, lost 15% of its value in 6 minutes for no apparent reason. Since then, there have been numerous other examples of financial asset momentarily losing up to 99% of their value in a flash crash. One notable recent example is the July 2017 flash crash of Amazon Inc., one of the world's most valuable companies by market capitalization, which momentarily lost 87% of its value after market trading.
Eliminating the human element in trading decisions, IT departments have become the most important aspect of Wall Street trading firms, paying millions to computer programmers to write code for trades to beat competitors by a millisecond. This is not an exaggeration. When competitive units of time are measured in millionths of a second, what's left to exploit? Marx's prophesied moment may be close at hand. The concern of analysts is that these exceedingly complex high-speed computer programs are linked directly into the banking systems of all developed countries, but the underlying computer architecture and software of the banking systems is many decades old. How these two systems would function together in the event of a substantial crash or cascading series of computer failures, well, it remains to be seen. Much of the world's wealth is digital, and after a serious crash, would be found to simply lack reality. This wealth is just a series of electronic digits in the cyber world, perhaps backed up by one real dollar for every 100 digital dollars, whatever the currency may be. Something like this happened to the Cyprus banking system in 2013, but the global system held steady and depositors ended up losing only about 50% of deposits. But if much of the global system fails, financial losses will be significantly greater.
For many years now, Maitreya has predicted a financial crash and an end to this selfish global economy. As with the fall of the Berlin Wall, we may all wake up one day to an entirely new situation. There is no easy way to go from this system we have to a new and better one, but the loss of illusory digital wealth, especially by those who make money off money, could ease the world into a fairer economic system perhaps more gently and quickly than the painful stock market crashes of old, and especially so with Maitreya's guidance. In such a scenario, it would not be too difficult a task for the world's governments to provide some basic level of liquidity to their economies, either in the form of printed currency, such as allowing all people daily ATM withdrawals, or replenishing banking liquidity to some level, such as up to the various stated government-sponsored deposit guarantees, so that money could begin once again to move through the economy. It is not money itself that is the problem, but the speculation with it that causes economic dislocation and malinvestment into non-productive uses and into a global casino-like gambling culture. A rapid digital crash, as described above, where speculation was wrung out of the economy worldwide, would force governments rapidly to meet the true needs of their citizens for housing, food, health care, and education. Providing these necessities would become the single focus purpose of governments everywhere.
Our next article is about empowering women and improving their communities. While great strides have been made towards gender equality through the efforts of organisations working to support the UN's Millennium Development Goals, women and girls continue to suffer discrimination and violence in many parts of the world. Despite this, there are positive examples of women who triumph against all odds, showcasing the benefits that women also share with their communities when they are supported to develop self-sufficiency through a sustainable livelihood. International organisations that study and support the empowerment of women to reach their full potential note that wherever women get a leg up, they share their earnings with their families, improving their children's nutrition and education and benefit their communities in countless ways. Along these lines, Heifer International, a charity that supports women by donating farm animals, notes, if women farmers had access to the same resources as men, more than 150 million additional people would have enough food to eat.
Farida Khatun, a Bangladeshi woman, is one such example. In the early 1980s, when she was only 17 years old and pregnant with her first child, her husband left her to marry another woman. Farida moved in with her parents and gave birth to her first son. While her parents encouraged her to remarry, thinking this would be the only way to ensure her future, Farida was determined to not risk her or her son's welfare to another man. In 1985, her brother brought her a lamp, hoping that it would enable her to build a livelihood. With that one lamp, Farida was able to become a sheep farmer, with only a small piece of land and no formal training in animal husbandry. Today, at the age of 50, Farida is a successful entrepreneur with a flock of 49 sheep and has inspired many in her community.
She raises animals with an endearing compassion, taking them to graze in the fields every morning, as she has done for 32 years, bringing them home after lunch. The sheep sleep in a shed she erected adjacent to her small living space, where she can keep a watchful eye on them. She treats her flock respectfully as though they are her family members, mourning them when one dies. The sheep follow her wherever she goes, says Farina's daughter-in-law, Salina Bergen, adding that Farina will rear sheep till her last breath because they are what gave her a new lease of life.
A neighbour, Razia Bagdoum, recently bought a pair of female sheep from Farida and also dreams of expanding her flock, explaining, I want to change my fortune like Farida. While Farida's son, now a father of three, has his own flower business, Farida continues to bear all the costs of her family. I bear the education cost of my grandchildren too. I even bought my daughter-in-law gold ornaments for her hands, ears, and neck, Farida proudly says, laughing. She is proof that when one has the will to change one's circumstances and a support system, a human spirit that refuses to be broken has the potential to reverse its fortunes.
Too true. And we have some figures here which we'll just read out quickly. When more women work, economies grow. An increase in female labour force participation or a reduction in the gap between women's and men's labour force participation results in faster economic growth.
Evidence from a range of countries showing that increasing the share of household income controlled by women, either through their own earnings or cash transfers, changes spending in ways that benefit children.
Increasing women and girls' education contributes to higher economic growth. increased educational attainment accounts for about 50% of the economic growth in OECD countries in the last 50 years, of which over half is due to girls having had access to higher levels of education and achieving greater equality in the number of years spent in education between men and women. But for the majority of women, significant gains in education have not translated into better labour market outcomes.
A study using data from 219 countries from 1970 to 2009 found that for every one additional year of education for women of reproductive age, child mortality decreased by 9.5%.
And lastly, women tend to have less access to formal financial institutions and saving mechanisms. While 55% of women report having an account at a formal financial institution, only 47% of women do so worldwide. This gap is largest among lower middle-income economies, as well as in South Asia and Middle East and North Africa. And the source for those facts and figures was unwomen.org. We have one last article, which is about a Dutch man's attempts, well, success actually, to build an anti-smog bicycle.
Dutch artist Dion Rosegaard has designed a bicycle which uses pedal power to help mop up the notorious smog levels in China. The bikes suck in polluted air using positive ionization to purify it before releasing the recycled air in a cloud around the cyclist. In December 2016, a so-called airpocalypse exposed 460 million Chinese people to smog levels six times higher than the World Health Organization guidelines. Flights were grounded and schools closed as 24 cities across China were put on red alert for extreme smog. Bikes have always been a symbol of energy-friendly and congestion-reducing living, says Rosegaard. But this bike serves a double function by cleaning the air as you cycle.
Rosegaard started his smog-free project in 2013 to design and build prototypes, including a smog-free tower, which purifies air in a public park in Tianjin. The positive ionization removes particulate matter from the surrounding air, expelling purified air through vents in the side. Healthier cities and urban innovation will always be connected with large-scale governmental investment, says Rosegaard. But I'm too impatient to wait for change to trickle down. The government does top-down and designers, universities and NGOs do bottom-up, and hopefully we may meet in the middle. And the source for that was theguardian.com.
Men will renew and beautify their cities, making them worthy of the new time. These will be greater in numbers and smaller in size, linked by transport, fast and noiseless. People will educate their children in many different ways, each child linked to the educational system as determined by their race. In time, the interchange between the masters and the race of men will grow in ever-increasing closeness, and children will move happily and logically from stage to stage in growing awareness. In all these measures, in this transformation, each one will play his part. Presently, there will appear a series of signs which will mystify those who experience them. No one will be able to explain the phenomena, but it will presage a change in the thinking and understanding of men. From that time onwards, a sense of expectancy will grip most nations.
And those few words were from Benjamin Krem's master, entitled The Coming Transformation, and show exactly what Dan Rosegaard is all about with his smog-free bicycle. And that's our program. Thank you very much for listening today. Go well in whatever you're doing, and love and light, everyone.